part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm not doing part. Fanboy.com.
All right, well, let's get started. Which one do you want to start with first? Because on this episode of Part-Time Fanboy with Christian Horn and Doctor Who expert, scholar, genius, Barry Negrin, we're going to try and discuss both. We're going to do the season 10 premiere of Doctor Who and the Doctor Who spinoff known as, only as Class, which
now it sounds like it's a very ambitious thing to do. However, since at least one of them was so thin on story, I think we could actually bang them both out quite easily.
I think we can too, because I mean, I will say that I was not blown away by either one, but I did not hate either one either. I was just kind of like, I like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
But there wasn't anything that like made my, like the hair on the back of my neck, you know, like stand on end or anything. So
I would say since we were going to have my daughter help out with Class, but since she's bailed.
Yeah. Much like teenagers do.
Yeah. Let's show them in the order they were aired. So all let's right. start with Doctor Who.
Let's start with Doctor Who. Doctor Who, Series 10, with Peter Capaldi returning as the Doctor.
Or as some of us would call it, Season 36.
Season 36, yeah, that's right. The ones in the know, which are you, the old school fans. I am part of the new Who, so... But I've been discovering older episodes, as anyone who listens to this podcast and you know that I've gone back and watched a lot of the old stuff. But so you being the expert, what were some of your thoughts? Well, let's break down the plot. I mean, the Doctor is,
such as it is.
Yeah, I mean, the Doctor is basically he's teaching at a university, right?
Seemingly. Anywhere between 50 and 70 years.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. For a long time, he's kind of been just hanging out, teaching at a university. Nobody really gets into, they don't really get into like what he's teaching.
And it's not even clear what he's teaching, but yeah, people love his lectures.
Exactly. So. But people love him and they think he's a great professor. And a college professor. And they love him so much that they sneak into his lectures and his classes. So he's been there for a long time, and one of the people who sneaks into his classes is a young woman known as Bill Potts, correct?
Yes.
Who is the new companion, portrayed by Pearl Mackey. And
right.
She is called to the Doctor's office because he wants to talk to her about her having snuck into his classes without actually having been enrolled in the university, right?
At all.
She works in the cafeteria, in the commissary or whatever, whatever you call it when it's college. It's university, as they would say in England. And that's sort of what kind of gets the ball rolling, right?
I mean, that's most of it. I mean, he's in his office and he summons her in, and she comes bounding in. And, we're treated initially with, you know, a couple of establishing shots of the office, which are initially fleeting, where you get a glimpse of a coffee mug full of old sonic screwdrivers.
Yeah.
I mean, you could pick out all of the old ones.
Did you pause and, like stop and name them all, like,
I did not.
Oh, you did not? Oh.
No, but I did recognize at least three of them. So I figured they weren't going to play fast and loose with the Sonics, so I think they're probably all in there.
Gotcha.
I mean, you know, he had two photos on his desk. He had of course, River Song, his recently for him departed wife.
Yes.
And actually, the other one was a black and white photo of Susan Foreman, his granddaughter.
That's right.
The first episode. Though I have to tell you, I was so convinced the first time I watched it that it wasn't Susan, which of course makes more sense that it's Susan. I thought it was one of his other companions from 1966 named Dodo Chaplin, because she always used to wear a hat like that and she had hair like that. I'm like, oh, that's an interesting choice.
Oh, really?
I wonder why you're going with Dodo. And then I went on the, I looked it up later. I'm like, no, of course it's not Dodo Chaplin. That's stupid. Of course it's Susan Foreman.
That's so funny. You know?
But then they, you know, they made sure to linger over the photos so long that, you know, even the thickest fan could be like, oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so this is this the very first time they've ever, like, referred to her in the modern Who?
I don't think so, no. There's
you
been,
don't think so?
There've been other references.
I have
think
there
have been references, yeah.
Where he's, I mean, I think maybe he's mentioned that he had a granddaughter or, like, referred.
He did. There was one episode, he was either in the Ninth Doctor or the Tenth Doctor, where he said, I was a father once and a grandfather.
Yeah.
Susan was supposedly his granddaughter.
Yeah. But I think this is the first time you've ever seen her image, correct?
I'm not so sure. I believe in some of the older shots, like in the Day of the Doctor, when they have old footage of all 12 of them up on the wall, you know, when they're like all the 12 TARDISes come to save Gallifrey, I think you see William Hartnell in the background with Susan. I'm not sure.
Interesting.
Also, I believe there might have been a photo of one of them in one of the Zygon episodes.
Oh, really? Yeah, it's really interesting because I think there were a lot of fans for a while, like when Doctor Who returned, were wondering if, like, she was even still part of the legacy. You know what I mean? But I guess,
because there's a theory whether she's a, you know, she's his granddaughter, she's at least part-time Lord, so maybe she's still alive.
Ah, that's a good point. Yeah, I know that there's actually speculation as to whether they would bring that character back with another actress, correct?
Oh, well, right, because they could.
Yeah, they could, because they're...
And, you know, actually, the original actress is still alive, so they could bring her back.
Oh, is she really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Wow.
Carol Ann Ford.
Wow. Interesting. So, I mean, basically, Billy gets called in and the doctor is so impressed with her because one of the things he says is that when she doesn't understand something or when she's introduced to, like, new information, she doesn't frown. She smiles. So
right.
He basically offers to take her under his wing and be her instructor, her tutor for what you don't know.
Right.
You don't know what she's majoring in. You don't know any of that. That's kind of like left sort of to our imagination. But what
I think he actually said that, you know, when she asked him, what are we studying? And he said, everything.
Yeah. I guess there's no specific. Yeah. But I mean, you know, if you were being brought under the wing of a professor at a college, you would think that there would be sort of a specialty, right? That he would teach you about. Like, what are we going to study? Yeah, I guess everything,
you know,
is the answer.
Typically, your professor would be in a specific department, but the doctor's lectures are all over the place. So
it's not clear. And you find out that Bill has actually developed a crush on another young lady at school who is either a student or, she's not another one that sneaks in. She's a student and she has this odd, thing with her eye where it basically, what was it?
There was a star
in her iris. Yeah, that's what it was. And, they kind of like fall for each other, like at the local bar, or Bill seems to like fall really hard for her, but doesn't know what this other girl's deal is, correct?
Right. She's very mysterious.
She's very mysterious and aloof. And what you end up finding out is that there are aliens who have been, what was it? They are water aliens? They are...
No, there was a ship that had landed there.
That's right.
Years ago, and... there was there were scorch marks on an empty lot, and in the middle of the scorch marks there was a puddle, but it was a weird puddle because when you looked into it, it didn't really reflect you like a mirror. It showed you your non-reversed image self, which mirrors aren't supposed to do.
Yeah, that's right. That's really funny because I have heard that people make mirrors like that.
I've seen them, actually.
Have you? And it freaks people out.
Yeah, it is. It's a little weird.
Is it really? Oh, I've never done that before. I've always wanted to find one and be like, what does that look like? Yeah. Oh, wow. That's interesting. Yeah. And so, yeah, I remember it's like the remnants of sort of like a ship made out of water, and they're sort of stranded. And what they need is somebody to sort of possess and be the pilot so that they can get back to where they, like, they need to inhabit somebody.
It was such sloppy writing around that whole storyline because it actually, the way that the doctor was explaining it, it sounded like, you know, if those were the scorch marks of the engines and there was this blob in the middle, if that were a car, what would you call it? You'd say it was an oil leak.
Yeah.
So it was some sort of like super intelligent oil from the ship.
Yeah. Yeah. That but it needed somebody to get back. And the problem with the, you know, young lady with the star in her iris was that she was kind of depressed or down and always felt out of place at the school. And one of the things that she says to Bill when she first meets her is like, I always want to be away from here, or I always want to get away, or something like that, right?
Now, you know, I wonder, it's been making me think, because I've been wondering the entire episode if there ever really was a girl, Heather, that we saw during the show, or if even by the time Bill met her, she was already the oil puddle monster.
No, I think there's definitely a girl. I think there was definitely a girl, and when Bill first meets her, I think she's definitely like a shy girl, because the doctor even says that she said that one thing to Bill where, you know, she said, I always want to get away, or I never want to be here, or all right, I don't feel like I belong here, or something. And it was her yearning to get away that the puddle monster that honed in on, so that it would be able to either possess her, that she would be the pilot of whatever craft, so that they could get to wherever they wanted to go. And it was also the young Heather's longing for Bill, you know, the promise that she made where you wouldn't leave, like where she was becoming the puddle monster, being possessed or sucked in or whatever, that made her chase after Bill. So,
right.
So there and definitely actually, was a girl.
Okay. I'll grant you that. But so here, you know, obviously Doctor Who relies on a lot of suspension of disbelief.
Sure.
I mean, I'm the first one to grant that. But so here you have Bill being pursued by a puddle monster.
Yes.
That turns into Heather.
Yes.
A drippy Heather. It looks a lot like the waters of Mars.
Uh-huh.
Remember that episode?
Yeah,
With David Tennant, they were on Mars, and you can get infected by the water, and
that's
you
right.
just start dripping
that's
water.
That's why it seemed familiar to me. Okay, yeah, okay.
So there was a lot of that going on, and that was like, okay, I mean, I understand, you know, it's not the exact same thing, but what really bothered me was that he gets her in the doctor gets Bill in the TARDIS, and they start zooming around. They go to Australia, and the drippy Heather pursues them there. Then they go to some 23 million years in the future at the other end of the universe, and Bill just, and then Heather just shows up.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, it's really not, doesn't make any sense at all that this entity could travel through space and time as quickly as the TARDIS.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, is it's a new thing. They can do whatever they want with it, right? It's kind of like a new creature, even though it's really funny that you mentioned that it's derivative of waters of Mars a little bit. We have mentioned in the past how a lot of Moffat's, particularly during the Capaldi years, villain monsters lately seem to mimic aspects of the Blink episode that he wrote like way back when, you know what I mean? So there is a part of me that says like, oh, you know, maybe he or the production people are running a little bit out of ideas. Like, we already did Water Monsters. Now we're going to do Water Monsters again. You know what I mean?
But just attractive water monsters this time.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that look like a young 20-something college student. But
right.
But, you know, that's the thing is I think that was sort of it sets up the plot in a way. I mean, I don't disagree with you. I think it is a bit sloppy writing, but it's one of those things where you need to show sort of the doctor's capabilities, like what he can do and all the crazy things he can do. And the way that you kind of do that in this episode is set him up against a foe that he's not really met before and is sort of almost as omnipotent or as
unstoppable
as he is. You know what I mean? So right. I think there's definitely a reasoning for that. And I just kind of bought it. The biggest problem that I had with this episode was the need to sort of like, I'm assuming they went to someplace like during the Time War. I couldn't place it.
So
with
now
the Daleks.
Here, you know what? This is now where some of my ancient Doctor Who knowledge comes into play.
Okay.
So you saw briefly these aliens that were fighting.
Yes.
The Daleks, and they had this like sort of shimmery silver dreadlocks.
Yes.
And those were the Movellans. They were in one episode only.
Oh,
I don't remember
really?
The name of the episode, but it was a Fifth Doctor episode. And it was they were also a race of androids like the cyborgs like the Daleks were. Actually, they may have been entirely robots, I'm not sure. But they had a hive mind like the Daleks, so that's why the Daleks and the Movellans were engaged in a stalemate, because they didn't have any original thinking.
Uh-huh.
In any event, the Dalek-Movellan war was like a big deal.
Yeah, I just looked it up, and I'm looking at the images of these, holy moly, that is some old school Doctor Who.
Right?
Jeez. Wow. So this was only one episode.
That's it.
Wow, I mean, not one series, one episode?
There was a reference back the long... There was a...
Destiny of the Daleks.
It's the one. There was another, actually. There was a reference in a later episode about the Movellan virus that hurt the Daleks later, but you didn't actually ever see the Movellans again.
So the Movellans were fighting a war with the Daleks, and so Peter Capaldi's doctor takes Billy to that sort of moment in time and so that he can trick a Dalek into attempting to destroy the water beast.
Yes.
Which kind of fails completely, right?
Well, yeah, instead, because Heather turns into a drippy Dalek.
Yeah, and exactly. Possesses the Dalek, and then you're sort of like, oh, we've just, you know, out of the frying pan into the fire sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, that was the sort of thing where it was definitely the sort of episode where they had to introduce, obviously, it's like every time he meets a new companion, it's the same thing. TARDIS is bigger, you know, on the inside.
Yeah. Before we get off of that little point, I want to quote to you something from a Stephen Moffat interview that he gave recently. He says,
I sent it to you.
I don't think anyone ever gets tired of people walking into the TARDIS and noticing it's bigger on the inside. Nobody minds. It's like Bond, James Bond. You want it every time, even though you already know it's coming. You know what? To me, Steve, it's enough already.
Oh,
you know,
that's where you and I disagree, because I was actually going to post on my Facebook wall, like, I don't care how many times it's done, I will never get tired of the new companion walking into the TARDIS being like, wow, because I love that. I love that reaction.
But it took up like, this one took up like 10 minutes of the show. I mean, she says, oh, you had a knock through. Oh, wait, no, it's an elevator. No, wait, it does this. I mean, it was so long. And even, you know, the doctor comments to Nardole, it's taking a bit longer than usual, isn't it?
Yeah. For her to get it.
I mean, that was
funny,
but, you know, for me, since we've seen this so many times, mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of Bond, James Bond, like anybody else. I like my martinis you know, made with vodka and shaken, not stirred. But
yeah,
that takes 3 seconds. You know, when Dr. Harry Sullivan with the fourth doctor first went into the TARDIS, you didn't even see his reaction. You just sort of heard him as he was walking in. He said, "I say," or "My word."
Yeah.
And that was it. That's all you got. And everyone knows, like, wait, what's going on?
Well, I think that's definitely a different time. And you're right. They could sort of play it like that. But for somebody like me who appreciates, like, when they engage in those moments of wonder, like, that's one of the things that I always really loved about the sort of modern era of Doctor Who. And, you know, the older Doctor Who, when they do it, you know, is when people, and it's one of the things that I really love that they engage in, like in sci-fi movies. And, you know, Spielberg used to do that a lot, like Close Encounters, E.T., is that moment of like, we are not in Kansas anymore. Like, I love that. I hate it in sci-fi. Like, you know, like they do it in Michael Bay movies where they gloss over those moments and it's like, we got to go into action. You know what I mean? Or when somebody's kind of like, not impressed. That was one of the things that I didn't like about Amy Pond, was that whenever she would be confronted by stuff like that, she'd kind of be like, eh, oh yeah, okay, sure. And I'm like, nobody would be that way. Nobody would be like, yeah, you know, whatever. I love those moments.
To me, the best reaction was Rory, because when he pops in the TARDIS and he sees, oh, it must be a relative dimension, and the doctor's like, what?
Yeah,
I'm reading up on you.
Yeah. But that is one of the things that I just love about Doctor Who, how crazy it can get and how wild, and those moments of like, wow. Now, you may be right that maybe they stretched this one out, but they did it for comedic effect, and it actually kind of like lets you get to know this companion and what they're all about a little more. And I actually really, I enjoyed that moment. I kind of liked it. That's so funny that you and I are total direct opposites on that, because I was actually going to post something and say, I don't care how many times I see it, I will never get tired of that moment where the new companion's like, what the hell? Because I would be like freaking out. I'd be like, oh my God, this.
I mean, of course.
A thing like this exists. You know what I mean? I would just be like so blown away.
No, but I mean, I know, but look, it's very jarring to our puny ape brains. We get it, Stephen. I know. Move on. I mean, and there was like so much exposition about Bill, who I think did a fine job. I think she's a lovely actress. I mean, she's totally believable.
I like her a lot.
I think she's good. I like that she's spunky. Yeah. I like that she's observant. You know, she's got the smart, you know, she's in, you know, innately intelligent, which is obviously critical to be a TARDIS companion.
Yeah.
You know, she notices that she bought him a rug, and you know, he said to her at one point that the TARDIS, the cabinet, was so heavy he needed to have it brought in on a crane.
Yeah.
And yet, when she notices that he put the rug down, he put it under the TARDIS like it was nothing.
Yeah.
So it couldn't be that heavy.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I love the bit where the water monster is chasing them and they go into the TARDIS and she's like, what, a box? Like, this is not gonna. And I love how they hold on her staring out the window and he's like, it can't get in. And I loved how they dragged out that moment. Oof. Like, I loved it. Like, they pull back and she's still looking and, you know, the darkness around the door and then, you know, suddenly the lights come on. I love the way that was directed.
So that was fantastic to me. That was nice, because that she hadn't even turned around at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
It was great.
Exactly.
You know, because that was a new spin on it, because usually people just blunder on in and they're like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's looking at it like, what do you mean it's impregnable? There are freaking windows, for God's sake. It's made of wood.
Yeah.
You know, then she turns around, but then it's the whole thing. It's just these, I thought the whole episode had a lot of, was real, you know, rehashing well-worn tropes.
Sure.
Over and over again.
Yeah. Which I think is the sort of thing you kind of need to do when a new companion's introduced. I mean, you sort of need to sort of like, okay, here we go again. Here are the steps. Unless it's somebody, you know, it's interesting that, I mean, in this modern era, they've all been human, right? There hasn't been like any alien companion. There's never been anyone who's like, well, I mean,
Nardole actually now.
Yeah. That's what I was just going to say. And I like him a lot.
He's not from Earth.
Yeah.
It seems like he might be part cyborg, because when he was, you know, the ushering Bill into the office initially, it looked like he dropped a bolt or a lug nut.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, 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 that's right. I didn't get that at all.
Well, because he had his head cut off and it was installed inside King Hydroflax. Hydroflax, I think it was his name. In the episode, The Husbands of River Song.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Somehow, they later explained that in the Return of Dr. Mysterio, the last episode, that the doctors sort of put him back together, but they don't really say how.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Yeah, totally. But I actually really like, what's his name again? Narwhal?
Narwhal? It sounds like Narwhal, and he sort of looks like one, but it's Nardole.
Nardole. Okay. Yeah, yeah. I did not know his name, but I actually really, I think he works. I think I really like him.
It's
a lot.
Awesome.
But yeah.
He's a goofball and he's kind of terrified, but he has advanced science knowledge, which to me, I really feel like they would do so well in not having constantly picking up, you know, the young, cute Earth women who are young. I mean, get some, like, that was what was so great about Romana as a character back in the day when we did our Key to Time series.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, she was practically the doctor's equal.
Yeah.
Not quite, because she was still on her first regeneration. She was only 140 and he was, you know, 750. But she was a Time Lord.
Yeah.
You know, she got the technology. She was able to pilot the TARDIS. She's read the manual.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what I don't get about modern companions is, A, why can't exactly any of them sort of be from an alien race? Why do they all have to be human?
And, why do they all have to be female?
Yeah, exactly. Why do they all have to be of the opposite sex? I mean, why couldn't he travel with a dude? I mean, you know, you've got bros. You hang out with your bros,
right,
you know?
Right.
So that's the other thing is that I don't get. But, I mean, it doesn't take away my enjoyment from the show. But every time they introduce a new companion, I'm sort of like, hey, why don't we just mix it up a little bit instead of it always being sort of a young lady, right? You know?
Right. I mean,
college age.
Right, even in the old, in Old Who, you know, you had characters like Nyssa, who was young and unbelievably cute, but she was also like a brilliant mathematician and scientist.
Uh-huh.
I mean, she ends up leaving the show because they go to this leper colony, this, you know, like space leprosy, Lazarus disease, and she's going to leave because she's working on a cure. And she's like, doctor, I've got to stay here. And he's like, but it's like, you know, festering and pussy. And she's like, no, this is where I need to be. I need to help these people. I mean, how great is that? I mean, but that's always a running theme with the companions is they always remind the doctor of how to, like, how to, you know, have a heart or hearts, as the case may be.
Yeah.
I mean, even here, even in this episode, you see that with Bill where, you know, they're so, like, the doctor takes Heather, Drippy Heather, to the Dalek Movellan War so that the Daleks will shoot her. And instead, Bill goes to talk to her and basically asks what she wants and goes to touch her and they have a little Vulcan mind meld.
Yeah.
And, you know, so it's, you know, you get similar, I got a similar vibe to when Amy was trying to protect the Star Whale in that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Beast Below.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, it is funny. Well, I mean, that's sort of what the companion is all about, right? To show the doctor the things that he is not, you know, looking at. And, you know, even from the beginning with Rose, you know, in that episode Dalek, where, you know, he's insisting, like, this is a creature that we must destroy. And
I got to put it down.
You know, and she's like, yeah, he's like, I got to put it down. Yeah, exactly. And she's like, no, we have to, you know, it's in pain. We have to talk to it. And he's like, you don't know where you're. So, I mean, I think the companions always serve as sort of like a balance and sort of a way to, you know, depending on which characterization of the doctor we're talking about, you know,
right,
to balance him out or to chill him out or, you know, to pull him back from, you know, being an ass, you know.
Well, you know, it's funny because there,
balance.
There were two episodes that I want to call in from each, even in the modern era, as recently as this season and a couple seasons ago, where it was, because, you know, there was the Doctor Who marathon on BBC America this whole week.
Nice.
So I was watching a lot, and I was watching the first of the Viking episodes with the Shielder, the Viking girl who he made immortal with the long story we don't have to go into right now, but he catches up with her like 900 years later. She's a, you know, close to a thousand, and, you know, she wants to travel with him, and he says, you can't, we can't be together, because we need these, like, these ephemeral puffs of smoke, these humans around us to remind us that life is precious. Otherwise we're just a pair of jaded assholes.
That's right.
And the other moment that it reminded me of is when, he was talking to River Song, I believe it was the Matt Smith era, and he invited River to travel in the TARDIS with him, and she said, one psychopath per TARDIS is enough.
That's great. That's great. Yeah, that's really funny. Yeah, but I mean, I think that Bill is going to be a really good companion. I mean, I definitely am very much into her after the first episode. I think she's going to be really funny. And to your sort of complaints of, like, past companions, she's not into guys. So, or at least, you know, she's gay.
Right.
We don't know if she's bisexual or gay, but there's not going to be any of that sort of mooning over the doctor that you're always complaining about.
Right, right. Well, we, you know, one character we never saw moon over the doctor was Donna.
That's right. Practically hated
him for half the episode she was in.
That's right. Well, I think, like, towards the end, there was definitely sort of a thing of, like, I don't know. I don't know if there was ever, I think there was a bit of an attraction with Donna, but she could never take him seriously. You know what I mean?
Right.
She could never take herself too seriously to, like, even engage in it to the point of where, like, why would I hook up with this space alien? But I do think that she definitely had a little bit of a flame for the doctor. It just wasn't played out as, like, hard as Rose's was.
Oh,
you know,
God.
Shut
well,
up.
Martha.
Rose is the best.
Martha.
I like Martha too.
No, I think they're great. I think they're great characters, but that just the whole ending at Bad Wolf Bay just makes me want to vomit.
Oh no, I love all that stuff. I love Tennant. Tennant's my doctor. But so I mean, by the end of the episode, the sort of, like, what you find out is kind of what we've talked about before, is that Bill discovers that the reason that the Heather water monster has been chasing her is because she actually promised her that she wouldn't leave her as she was being turned into the water monster. And
right.
Bill, once she does that Vulcan mind meld, you know, with her, that the doctor's like, no, she realizes the truth, and she says, like, it's okay, you have to let me go now, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Which, to me, very similar to the way the doctor ended the Mummy episode with the foretold, where instead of shooting the monster or, you know, doing anything really scientifically clever, he said, we surrender. And then, because the mummy was this just phase shifted soldier, and if you do the enemy's surrenders, okay, I'm done. So, you know, I don't know why he knew that. I mean, I'm glad he knew that, otherwise it would have been, the season would have been finished. But you know, it's never really explained, because in many cultures, if somebody would surrender, the soldier would say, okay, I'm gonna cut your head off now.
Well, or take them prisoner, imprison
right.
them. Yeah, exactly.
I guess it's a British show. They're more civilized than the rest of us.
That's true. It depends on who you ask, but yes, yes, yes. So, I mean, basically, you sort of end up with Bill, like, going back home, and then the doctor wants to mind wipe her, right? So that she'll forget. And there's that really, I thought that was a really good moment. It's funny because I think also in that interview that you sent me with Stephen Moffat, he says that people also really like the small sort of emotional moments. It's not
the
all
quiet
the big.
Moments, yeah.
Yeah. They spend like all this money on the explosions and the effects and stuff like that. And what you end up with, the moments that people love are moments that are like really sort of two people connecting or like
true.
Having an emotional moment. And that's absolutely true. That's good writing. But they had like a really great moment like that where, you know, she's like sort of on the verge of tears and she's like, imagine somebody doing this to you. You know what I mean?
And as we know, yeah. Somebody did do it to him.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he,
you know, that's how he forgot Clara. She, you know, they had that at the end of that episode before she died, or maybe it was the one after, I don't know, but she had reprogrammed this Gallifreyan device and it was a 50-50 chance it would wipe her mind or his mind. And it turns out it wiped his mind so that he wouldn't remember her and grieve over her.
Yeah.
And he
yeah.
sort of like gets snippets of it. He gets like a snatch of a memory once in a while, but he can't quite put his finger on it.
Yeah. It's really interesting though, because did they say a reason why he wants to wipe her mind? Like, that's the thing that I didn't get. I was like, why are you doing this? I mean, is it because you think people will come at? I think, yeah, no, that's what it was. He thinks people will come after her because she knows about him or something like that, right?
Well, there was a lot left up in the air in that episode, and
yeah.
that I think was one of them. You know, he was said that he was doing it for her own good, but you know, the way that was evocative of when he had to wipe Donna's mind, but that yeah. was because Donna had absorbed like half of the knowledge of Gallifrey, and her brain was going to explode because it was still just a human brain.
Exactly.
But so that wasn't going on here, but there was so much up in the air that we really don't know. I mean, there was this mysterious vault. Under the sewer. We don't know what that's about. Why is he teaching on Earth for 50 to 70 years? We don't know. You know, why is he teaching in the first place?
That's right.
He says like when he's thinking about bringing her into the TARDIS in the first place, he says he promised not to do this. He promised what? Well, you know, was he promising not to travel anymore? Was he promising never to take a companion again? Was he promising, you know, what? What was he? What? And then. Who did he promise it to? Did he promise it to the Time Lords? Did he promise it to himself? Did he promise it to Clara? So they're like these like little snippets that obviously, you know, one could argue is to keep you longing to see the rest of the season, or it's like they just didn't bother to write it. I mean, in this case, I'll be generous of heart and say it's to keep you wanting more for the season.
Gotcha. Yeah, no, I think that there's definitely some things that will be explained in the long run, and you know, I don't think they're going to leave us hanging, but there was a lot of interesting stuff in there. But for me, the big thing was like, why are you going to wipe her mind? But then he decides to sort of go against it, and it was really interesting. There was a musical cue in there that basically was sort of like, I don't know if you would call it like Clara's theme, or
you would call it Clara's theme,
yeah, and it was very much sort of evocative of like Clara, and it sort of brought you back to the last season, or the last you know, her last hurrah, and reminded you of that. And so I thought that was really well played out. I really enjoyed it. And then, you know, by the end of the episode, he's kind of like, all right, ready to go. And you know, they jump in the TARDIS and they're off.
Right. Well, you know, it's also good because you at least for Bill, you have, you know, she's got a kind of a tough situation at home. She's got a foster mother who's kind of a neglectful shit.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's not like she's got a lot to, you know, leave. It's not, you know, that's sort of the opposite of Amy, where Amy was about to get married and she sort of ditches Rory the night before their wedding.
Yeah.
You know, she's got really not a lot going on Earth.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's a little bit like Rose, too. I honestly do. I think Rose did not, you know, she didn't have a lot of, like, stuff going on. She was a bit of an aimless sort of either teenager or early 20-something.
Right.
And
she's
it was like,
in a shop.
What have I got to lose? You know what
right.
I mean? So I think that I think that, you know, there's no reason why she wouldn't, you know. And right. Honestly, I think for a lot of us, you know, except for those who have like kids or family, there would be, you know, yeah, I'm going, you know. And there's never any moment of hesitation on her part. She's like, let's go. And so, you know, obviously the doctor and her are off to have, you know, their adventures. And, you know, I think, you know, the thing that they do on this new Doctor Who is the casting. I think the casting is of companions for the most part, you know, even Amy Pond, you know, I'll say has been pretty much, you know, stellar. You know, I think they get like really good people in there. And I think that this actress, Pearl Mackey, I think she's going to be really good. What I kept wondering is I wonder if she will stick around when Capaldi leaves, you know?
Right.
Will she be that popular?
We'll see.
We'll see. I guess we're going to find out. But I mean, I liked it. I liked this first episode, and it's definitely got me interested in what's going on. I don't think it blew the doors off. You know what I mean?
No.
But it definitely, you know, that's the thing with Doctor Who is, you know, time will pass. And when I first discovered Who, on the Sci-Fi Network, like a long time ago, completely by accident, the Eccleston series, you know, I was there would be a new season or something, and I was just so excited. And I don't necessarily have that anymore, but whenever they do a new season, I'm definitely reminded of how much I loved it and why I loved it. So I'm pretty psyched about that. Like,
I mean, you could imagine now think about having watched the show since you were 9 years old.
Sure.
And, you know, there's a bit goes away for, I don't know, 15 years. They make a movie, which is great. And then it goes away for another decade. And then it comes back. And you're like, and, you know, it initially in 2005, it wasn't really even available in the U.S. that much. I don't know if it was because my cable company didn't have BBC America, or if, you know, there was no BBC America, or if it just, it wasn't on my cable. So I had to have a friend in Canada put them on videotapes for me and mail them to me.
Oh, wow.
That's how old I am.
That's amazing. That's so funny. That's great. So, I mean, but for a new Who fan and for a classic fan, we're pretty satisfied with this. And we like the new companion, correct?
Yeah, new companion was good. I like her. I thought the episode was meh because it was basically all about exposition for the companion's sake only.
Sure.
I mean, you got nothing more about the doctor. You got nothing more about, you know, his motivations or anything. And that's been but some fans have complained about that. And that lately, you know, it's the companion hour, sometimes featuring Doctor Who,
uh-huh.
But you know, it's not a problem when the companion's nice.
Yeah. 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 Well, as you know, that was definitely some of my problems with the Amy Pond years, where I was like, you know, she would tend to sort of overshadow Matt Smith, and, you know, I would get aggravated with that. I would, you know, but not overshadow him, but that's too strong a term. To me, she would get annoying and kind of like detract from what the doctor was doing. And I'd be like, but I don't think I really like Bill. What I really like is that she's sort of, you know, they obviously didn't go for, like, not that she's unattractive, I'm not saying that, but they didn't go for a pretty face, which is something that they've been doing lately, you know, and she's got character, she's got personality, she's funny, you know, and, you know, she is pretty, but she's not like supermodel, like, whatever, not saying
she's not with traditional Hollywood.
Exactly, view. Exactly. And that's what I really like. I really like that she has an interesting personality, interesting face, interesting character, interesting style. The one thing I wanted to ask you before I forget, what year do you think she was in? Because
interesting. I think it's now.
That's what I thought too, but she was wearing a t-shirt that said 1978. I don't recall seeing any cell phones. I wasn't paying attention to the kind of cars they were driving, but some of her style seemed like really late 70s, early 80s retro, like with the denim and the patches. And a picture that I'm looking at right now has her sort of in like a, not a varsity jacket, but those like shiny sort of like track, you know, like things that you wore in the 80s, like a track jacket. Like, I don't know what you call them.
Interesting.
But, so there was a part of me was like, is she from the 80s? Like, are they in the 80s right now? So, yeah, I'm wondering, like, maybe I have to go back and rewatch and look at the cars and everything.
I thought her t-shirt said California 1998.
No, 1978.
Oh.
It said 1978.
I thought it was just a retro t-shirt, though.
Yeah, no, it could be. It could very well be. But for some reason, it definitely stuck out to me that I was like, hey, you know, something's going on here. You know what I mean? Because there is definitely... I don't know, for some reason the thought popped into my head, like, this is not now. Like, I don't know why. So
no, but Heather, before she got all drippy, she was wearing a pair of jeans that had a ripped knee, which is popular now. Not so much before.
Well, that could be like 60s, 70s and stuff, early 80s. Yeah, that could be like punk.
No.
Yeah.
I'm not enough of a fashion expert to judge.
But. I think we'll see. Well, I guess we'll find out. I'm not sure, but I don't think they were, you know, nailing us over the head with it, but maybe they were trying to be subtle. You know, I don't know. But
this writer, Steve Moffat.
Yes.
He's not really known for his subtlety, so.
Well, I'm not so sure. But he's known to sneak things in on you and surprise you with stuff. You know what I mean? He's not subtle with the emotional or the big sci-fi beats, but he has been known to drop a surprise on you, correct?
Once in a while.
Oh, once in a while. Oh, I think he's actually pretty good on it on Sherlock. So, you know. So let's move on to Class.
Yes.
Class is a spinoff of Doctor Who, and this is the first spinoff since... Not Torchwood, but the Sarah Jane Adventures, correct?
Sarah Jane Adventures came after Torchwood?
I think so. I think they were both running at the same time, but I think Torchwood started first. Before Sarah Jane Adventures.
I'm not so sure.
I'm not sure.
It premiered January 2007. Torchwood. And it ran apparently 5 seasons.
Sarah Jane?
Yeah.
Sarah Jane ran for a while. But so this is another Doctor Who spinoff, and this one has to deal with the Coal Hill School or Academy, correct?
Yes.
Was the Doctor a teacher at Coal Hill? Like when he was
this shit has been happening in this poor school since 1963 in Shoreditch. It's funny because they had this establishing shot of the neighborhood, and you could see that the walls in the area were very exactly the way they were in 1987's Remembrance of the Daleks. And even in 1963 and in 1987, there's this construction site around the corner where – at least in 1963, that's where the TARDIS would hang out. And it was this like blue wall boarded up. It looks like, they're about to build something. What the hell have they been building since 1963? It's 2017. They haven't even built it yet. I'm not sure, but it's very clearly the same exact spot. But so no, Coal Hill was where Susan Foreman was a student.
That's right.
The first two other companions, Ian Chesterton and Barbara Wright,
were
teachers, and they follow her to her home because, you know, she's very spacey in school and they would like to have a word with her parents.
Yeah.
Phone. And, you know, so they follow her back to this construction site, this junkyard on Totter's Lane. And, you know, she steps into the phone booth and they're like, what's going on in here? And they step in and, you know, the doctor whisks them away and, blah, blah, blah.
Yes, adventure. I saw this several years ago. I saw the very first series of Doctor Who. I rented it on DVD off of Netflix when Netflix was only DVDs. Yeah, I remember that. I just couldn't remember whether he was an instructor or what, like what the deal was.
So Susan was a student there.
Yes.
And then more recently, in season 8, I believe, he was the caretaker, John Smith, while Clara was the English teacher there.
That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, I never knew that Clara was a teacher at. I didn't know the connection between her and the first episode or the first series. Like, I never caught any of that. Was that something that was that everybody knew and I just wasn't paying attention?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And in fact, even in Day of the Doctor, you know, the episode where she. Tick jumps on the motorcycle and rides into the TARDIS. She was in class, and there was a shot up front of the old version of the school, and it says, "I, Chesterton, headmaster." Mr. Chesterton had formerly been a teacher, and he graduated to headmaster.
That's great. That's great. That's funny. So class is set at this Coal Hill school, and it is a place that the Doctor has been involved in before, obviously, as you just explained.
Yes.
And it is basically sort of the setting for what ends up being a not alien invasion, but alien incursion. And so this is sort of like Doctor Who meets Buffy.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Yeah, and they even drop a Buffy reference towards the end.
No, they mention the Hellmouth, right.
Yeah, exactly. So this is definitely, these kids are in a school and they're dealing with an alien invasion, an alien incursion of shadow creatures, correct?
Yes.
And I forgot what they were called. They were called something really
Shadowkin.
Cool. Shadowkin, yeah, they were really cool. And basically what you end up finding out during the course of... Well, there is a mean teacher played by Catherine Kelly.
Who, oh, she was great.
She was great, and it's unfortunate that she's on this because I really thought that she would have made an awesome doctor if
nice.
They made it a female. She would have made a fantastic doctor. I was like, oh... You wasted her on this. You should have kept her for the next doctor. She would have been fantastic.
She's got the nasty attitude down. She's like a replay of 6.
Yeah, exactly. She's definitely, you know, sort of like the mean teacher in the school, and she's not taking any stuff.
But we find out why.
Yes.
We find out why, because she may be a psycho teacher, but she's also the bodyguard of this weird kid who's really an alien prince.
Yes.
Who's been actually, she and the prince were dropped on Earth sort of as a, you know, by the doctor to hide out so that they're not pursued because there was this big war and the Shadowkin had destroyed their planet.
Yes, yeah. Basically, oh, and before I go on, the Shadowkin design is probably one of the coolest Doctor Who creature designs that I've seen in a long time.
You know who they reminded me of? Yes, I thought they looked great. They were reminiscent of, but not so much that they look like a ripoff of, the Nazgul from Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, definitely, definitely. But these definitely had sort of like a samurai sort of look to them. I just thought they were badass looking. It was one of the things that I was like, oh, that's cool. Especially when the leader or the king or whatever he was of the Shadowkin showed up, I was like, and he started talking and solidified. I was like, oh, he looks badass. You know what I mean? I mean, that is very much for me, like lifted straight out of like an X-Men or like an Avengers comic book where I'm like, wow, that's really cool. But yeah, basically what you discover is one of the students is a prince from another planet, and he's stranded on Earth with his bodyguard, who is Catherine Kelly, the mean teacher, and because their race has been exterminated by the Shadowkin, and the doctor saved them at the last minute to because he has a weakness for creatures that are the last of their kind.
Right. Because he thought he was for a while.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And what you find out through the course of the episode is that the prince and the teacher, Ms. Quill, which is an awesome comic book name, Ms.
Right.
Quill, were actually on opposite sides enemies.
Of a different war, right.
Yeah, of a civil war on his planet. And
right.
She was more sort of like the Al-Qaeda to his, you know, well, they were like rebels. Or
was she the Al Qaeda, or was she George Washington?
Yeah, exactly. That's sort of the thing that you're sort of like left with. You don't know who is sort of good or who is sort of bad, but
right.
her sort of like angry, mean demeanor kind of would leave the viewer to think that she's, you know, but she does refer to, you know, basically her and the prince are bound because she and her compatriots were caught like trying to do some sort of sabotage or engage in rebellion. And her punishment was to basically be a slave to this prince and serve as his bodyguard because that's how they do things on that planet. Right.
Right.
Right. Which serves as a very interesting dynamic. I thought I really kind of like that a lot, where she's kind of like, it's sort of like, what is it? The Tony Curtis, Sidney Poitier, like defiant ones where they're bound by the chain, but they hate each other.
Right.
And they're sort of like, yeah, this is sort of like a little bit of that. And
it was actually, it's funny that you say that. It was reminding me a little bit. I mean, this is kind of a bit of a goofy reference, but it reminded me of that, of the pilot, the Seinfeld pilot that Jerry Seinfeld and George Costanza were writing for the network, where they couldn't come up with an idea, but somebody does something wrong, and then as their penalty, they're supposed to be the other person's butler. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I kind of remember that. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's definitely that sort of thing, and you know, it's kind of an interesting dynamic. The thing that I found, I found Miss Quill to be like fascinating, a fascinating character. I loved her. I thought she was great. The prince, I thought, was a bore. I was just like, wow, did they cast somebody with like no personality whatsoever? I was a little bit disappointed with him. But what I did like were a lot of the other kids. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah, I agree.
The kids were great. Like this actress, Sophie Hopkins, who plays April, like one of the...
Oh, she's great. I mean, the funny, they keep referring to her as like, you know, the Care Bear.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I thought I was watching this and I was seeing like, you know what? She's nice. Like I wrote my notes here, say, nice, caring, a little edge.
Yeah.
And, you know, she even like, that's before she even had like freaked out at the prom,
yeah,
where she's like, you know, you wouldn't listen to anybody nice. You'd only listen to a rat bastard.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, like, I love the fact that she's got some spine to her and she's got some spice.
Yeah. I really liked her a lot.
I even liked, you know, the jock Ram, who, you know, he's supposedly like the soccer star and like a big jerk, but he's got a soft spot for Tanya, the spunky prodigy.
Yeah.
In fact, he's actually quite intelligent.
Yeah.
He's being driven by his dad. Very classic storyline there. But you know, he's got a lot. He's much more complex than your dumb jock type.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely something there with that they're developing with the culture of his family and the expectations of him and stuff like that. I mean, again, it's you know, it's Stephen Moffat, so, which, you know, Moffat did this show called Skins about teenagers. And I don't know if it was BBC, but it was about teenagers. It ran for several seasons before he was on Who. And apparently it was really good and really popular. It used to be on Netflix. I don't know if it's on Netflix anymore. But he did this show, and I think it was, you know, kids and their problems and whatever, high school, or, you know, that's my understanding of it. So it seems like he's sort of writing to that. As well as to Doctor Who, and taking both of, you know, taking his chocolate and his peanut butter and trying to kind of like mix them into like a winning, you know, formula, which,
right.
You know, I don't think that me personally I am the necessarily like demographic,
no,
for this show, but I do think that, I mean, I did like it enough to where I was like, yeah, I'll check out the next episode, especially if there's a lot more Miss Quill, because I really liked her.
Oh, you know, she was great.
Yeah, I thought she was great, and she had an intensity, you know, but I did, you know, I just want to see how it goes, because it could go one way, which is like it becomes like really spectacular, or it could get really hokey really fast.
Right. I mean, you know, the characters are interesting, but they're, before they even made the Buffy reference, it struck me as such a ripoff of Buffy.
Yeah.
Where, I mean, especially, if we could, just to fast forward through a little of the plot where, you know, the Doctor shows up to save the day, as he's wont to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's repairing a crack in time, but he can't close it entirely. Like, you even see it when he's using the sonic. Like, there's a little tiny rip still left. And he says, well, you know, this area has been through a lot. Time has worn thin here. Cole Hill will act as a beacon. And the first thing out of my mouth to Romy was, ugh, it's a hell mouth. And she's like, what? I'm like, it's a Buffy reference. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And then, you know, then they said that like 5 minutes later. I'm like, I'm so smart. But
yeah.
But
well, it's that sort of thing that some TV shows do where it's very much, you know, we're sort of ripping it off, but it's okay because we're admitting that we're ripping it off. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And, you know, and that's fine. You know, God knows, like, I mean, Buffy's, what, 20th anniversary was recently, like this year,
yeah.
And is this year. And, you know, you've seen, like, all these articles on how much influence, like, it's left on the TV landscape. And you look at all
right.
those CW shows, Smallville, all that, like this, you know, even the new Doctor Who, so much of that is influenced by Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So, you know, obviously when it happens like this, yeah, okay, fine. Like, I'm down with it. No big deal.
Right.
You know, for me, it's more of like, it is a little bit of the silliness of the Doctor being like, these, you know, teenagers, they're the ones who will defend it. And I'm like, really? Because
okay.
there have been episodes where you go off on your companions about how dopey humans can be, and you know what I mean? Like, you know, or in the old series where he would be like knocking humans in their sort of like lack of intelligence or ability to, you know, do things without blowing up the planet. You know what I mean?
Right. But I mean, it's not just these kids. It's also, they've got the head of the resistance from the Quill.
Yeah.
In Miss Quill.
Yeah.
So she's clearly a badass. She's got, you know, some sort of Krav Maga thing going on.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they are pretty scrappy. I mean, even Ram, who, you know, normally you're a high school kid and some very large Nazguls coming after you and vaporizes your girlfriend.
Well, that was an amazing moment. That
you might freak out about that, but instead he like starts beating the crap out of the Nazgul.
Yeah. I really loved that moment. I was not expecting his girlfriend to just become like a big splatter. It's really funny because I was debating on whether to watch this with my daughter, and I'm so glad I did it because
yeah,
I was
probably
like,
not a good
this
idea.
This is a little too much, you know. You went a little too far, but
I mean, she's like her like blood was covering his face like
yes,
a second
all
later,
over. And then he gets he actually gets his leg cut off, and it's
ugh.
Really funny because like when that happened, I definitely had that reaction of like, oh man, your football career, you're done. Like, you know what
right.
I mean? Like, you're done, you know? And then the Doctor builds him like a bionic leg or something. And I was like,
right.
dude, the leg is still in the hall. Like, I'm sure if you took him to I'm sure the TARDIS could reattach it. If you could take him to a hospital and they reattach it and he have to do like rehabilitation, I'm sure the TARDIS can reattach it. Why build a bionic leg? So something's going on there where I'm sure you're going to find out that his leg can do all these like little funky things.
Because then and now it's a ripoff of the $6 Million Man.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny because it's not his whole leg. It doesn't even go up to his knee when he pulls it up and he looks at
well,
it.
Well, same with Steve Austin. He lost his legs at the knee.
No, he lost his whole leg up until the hip. He lost both legs up until the hip. Yep. And the arm all the way up. Yep. I am 100% sure about that. Because even in the show, the opening of the graphic, they show the leg all the way up to his hip. So that's why I was like, oh, this leg might be kind of useless. It looks cool. And how's he going to explain that thing at the doctor's office? Like when he goes for a checkup, you know? So there's definitely a lot of things where I was like, okay, you know, this is okay. But for the most part, like I didn't shut it off. You know, it kept me engaged. You know, I mean, you know, I'm
didn't
at the point,
off.
You know, dude, I'm
that's
at the
not
point.
Really, That's kind of faint praise there.
No, that is not faint praise, because I mean, there's a lot of shows that I watch and I'm just like, yeah, I gave you a shot. You know what I mean? I'm not,
right.
I could say that all the acting is really good. I really like the setup. There's definitely a couple of things that I found like to be a little goofy. And what I'm trying to figure out is, because, you know, the Sarah Jane Chronicles, or, you know, the Sarah Jane Show, and then you have Torchwood, you know, which was definitely for adults because of all the sexual content and,
oh, yeah,
and the violence. And then you had Sarah Jane, which was kind of like more for like kids, maybe my daughter's age, you know what
yeah.
I mean? Which I should introduce her to that. Maybe she would like those because she's really liking Doctor Who. But, you know, what is it trying to balance? Because obviously, you know, you're sort of like trying to be in that tween thing. How goofy is it going to get? You know, and this episode could have really veered into like really bad CW TV show, and it didn't.
Right.
You know?
No, I mean, you've got like the one thing that I was happy about is that these kids aren't like, you know, there's not like a lot of stooping around, and there's not like a lot of,
not yet.
No, not yet, of course. But, you know, like they're all like a little quirky in their own way.
Yeah. 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 Well, it's very much that sort of, again, that Buffy dynamic where one is a nerd, one is the good looking one,
the jock,
one is the brain, you know, like Sophie Hopkins, April would sort of be Willow.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So there's definitely templates that they're using, which again, for me is fine. And obviously, which, you know, you mentioned,
which would make that Mateusz, the like Polish Eastern European sort of half character who's not really seems to be involved that much. He's Cordelia.
Yeah, exactly. He's sort of Cordelia with less of a brain, because Cordelia definitely had a brain. But we'll see where that goes. Yeah, it was that was a little bit of a thing that bugged me, was that the prince kind of ended
up.
Well, he was meh, but also the fact that he was, and this is going to sound wrong, me saying it, that he was gay, and not because he was gay, but because gay is sort of presented as like a weird alien thing. You know what I mean? Like when he sort of says to April, like, oh, I want to ask this guy to the prom. She's like, oh my God, of course you would be. And you know what
right.
I mean? And then the fact that he is an alien, and obviously to him it's normal, which I get that that's what they're getting at. But why did the sort of like one homosexual character, or at least that we know of on this show right now, have to be sort of an alien prince from another world? Like why does that have to be sort of like a weird outworldly thing? That kind of bugged me a little bit, especially like with the air. Like I know what they're trying to do. Like we come from a culture where it's not a big deal, but
well,
there's also a part of me that's like, everyone
clearly,
else is like, that's weird. You know,
he clearly wasn't the only gay character on the show because he asked Mateusz to the dance.
Yeah. No, I know. I know what you're saying, but Mateusz, like you said, had like five lines in the whole thing. You know
right.
what I mean? Maybe they'll develop him more, but, you know, we'll see where that goes. But I mean, as a whole, I enjoyed it. I mean, I didn't think it like insulted my intelligence. I didn't
no.
feel dumb for watching it, you know, and gosh knows, you know, I like all the CW superhero shows. So, you know, I can have a little bit of fun and a little bit of dopiness mixed in.
I like the fact that I wasn't sure where it was going to go.
Yeah.
You know, like I wasn't sure, are all these kids going to make it to the end?
Yeah.
Except for Rachel, who for some reason I had a feeling wasn't going to make it, because we didn't actually know her name until after she was wasted.
Yeah.
So that to me is almost like she may as well have been wearing a red shirt on Star Trek.
Well, I thought that they were going to build up to her. I thought that they were going to build up to the whole, the dad doesn't approve of her, you know, that we would get to know her more, because obviously they're trying to introduce a lot of characters and a lot of subplots and stuff.
Right.
And apparently this thing's only going to be like 8 episodes. So,
well,
so far.
I mean,
yeah.
All of them, they did all air already in England.
Yeah.
So,
you sent me an article that it didn't do well in the ratings, so.
Ratings were terrible.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, the ratings in the UK may not have been good, but maybe the ratings in the US will be great.
Yeah.
You never know.
Well, it's got a good lead-in Doctor Who, so, I mean, obviously, if
right.
they're going to play back-to-back, there will be some, you know, bleeding over, but,
There was actually this one review, by the Daily Dot, said, unless you're completely new to supernatural teen dramas, Class will seem hopelessly formulaic. In the first two episodes, it offers nothing we haven't already seen in Buffy, Teen Wolf, or Smallville.
Yeah.
The comparisons to Buffy are especially unflattering because Class displays none of its subversiveness or wit, and Buffy was already playing with old tropes when it premiered almost 20 years ago. So,
yeah, I mean, I would say, I wouldn't say it that harshly, but I don't, but the thing of it is I also feel that a lot of shows do that. You know what I mean? And this is sort of Stephen Moffat and the BBC trying to sort of like get into that space. Obviously, there have been other shows with teenagers that BBC has done that might be superior to this, but I'm at least willing to stick with it for 8 episodes and see where it goes. I remember when I first started watching Torchwood, I didn't like it at all either. I had to try and watch it like twice. Like I watched it, started watching it, watched a couple episodes, and I was like, eh. And then I went back, started watching it again from the beginning because it had been like a year or something, and I just wasn't into it. And then the third time, something clicked, and I was like, all right, I'm in on this. So Torchwood did not like automatically leap out at me, and obviously the Sarah Jane Chronicles is not something I stuck with either, just because of sort of like the age range that it was, you know, aiming for. I just wasn't into it, but I'll give this a shot. It's only 8 episodes for right now. And I mean, I hope it does develop into something, you know, kind of interesting because it is Stephen Moffat. But the other thing too that we always discuss on this podcast is how Stephen Moffat may have stretched himself way too thin.
It's, you know, true.
With Sherlock and
Doctor Who. He's got a lot going on
and script doctoring and whatever. But for now, I'm going to watch Class, so I'm going to stick with
it. But he's leaving, but this is already his last season now for Doctor Who, so.
So, but is he going to stick with Class? Or is he just a producer? I don't know.
If it's renewed, I mean, what if it's not? That's the thing is that, you know, we don't know. I mean, if it takes off in the United States, they'll make another one.
Well, I just looked at the Internet Movie Database, and his name is not anywhere on it. He's executive producer. Yeah, he didn't write it. He didn't direct any of it. He's just an executive producer. So this could be, you know, a J.J. Abrams thing where, you know, his name just was what got the production off the ground and got it to in front of cameras. So, yeah, I don't know. Huh. Well, you know, I don't wish anything failure. And my first episode, my judgment of the first episode isn't that it should, you know, fail. I think it's got a lot of potential. It'd be interesting to see where it goes. There's just definitely some pacing issues and things that I think need to be sort of addressed. And they need to decide, like, how hokey are they going to get, you know?
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, personally, since it came on, we watched it right after we watched the incredibly slow pilot episode of Doctor Who. You know, I thought the pacing had picked up, relatively speaking.
That's funny. All right, so these are our opinions of the Doctor Who season 10 premiere and the Doctor Who spinoff Class. I have been
maybe,
what?
Maybe we'll revisit both of them at the end of the respective seasons.
Well, we're definitely going to do that with Doctor Who. We might as well do it with Class and come back and be like, hey, so we will definitely come back to Class at the end and be like, did we love it? Did we hate it? You know, did we stop watching it? You know, what came of that? So, we should definitely do that. I mean, Doctor Who's 12 episodes, so we'll probably be doing Class before Doctor Who, but either way, we've got plenty of bandwidth, so, and we love talking about this stuff. So.
We sure do.
Well, thank you for joining me on this episode, Barry Negrin.
And thank you for having me.
As always, it's a pleasure. And my name is Christian Horn, and this has been another episode of Part Time Fanboy. Check us out on Facebook, follow us on Twitter. We have an Instagram. You can email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. And as always, thank you for listening, and I will have a new episode up as soon as possible. Bye.
Part-time.